Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday, it's April 27th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. It'll just be you and I today. So because I do a lot of my writing in advance, then I'm going to need to read in order to be able to communicate on the air. So that being the case, between one subject and the next, I will take a break and look at the studio screen and in order to be able to see what's happening at both sides. And because I can't read and look at the studio screen at the same time in case you want to call. So in case you do want to call, you can call us at 347-205-9201. Again, the number is 347 area code 205-9201. The system is automated so that when you do call, you'll be able to hear the broadcast as it's taking place. And then between segments, I will review to see what's on the studio screen, and I'll ask for you to just give us your first name so that we can speak to you with respect and recognize you by your first name, and that's it. And if you prefer just to simply listen to the show, you can go to a special hyperlink. It's http://tobtr.com. So that's T like Tom, O, B like boy, T like Tom again, R. So tobtr.com/, and then the number 12089834. So that's the code if you want to just listen to the broadcast, and you can listen to the broadcast either live or on demand by clicking onto that particular hyperlink. And that hyperlink is also listed on our website. So the first thing I'm going to do, I did not write up. Had an extremely long day. I was over at the hospital. It was unbelievable, too. Nothing horrendous or dangerous, just very, very time-consuming. So I didn't have a chance to write this up. But as you well know, the former police commissioner in the city of Yonkers has moved on. He got a position with the MTA based out of New York City. And so I don't know what position he's gotten there. It doesn't really matter what the position is, but that's where he is. So he's left his position as the Yonkers police commissioner. So we have reliable sources who are in the know, who have advised us that Chris Sapienza is our next Yonkers police commissioner. And I think there will be an announcement to that effect possibly today, maybe as late as tomorrow. But whatever the case is, he is our next police commissioner, so I wish him well. There are challenges in the city of Yonkers with regard to police work. I personally did not think that they were professionally managed well under Mueller. But, you know, he's gone, so there's no point in discussing where it failed, where it didn't fail. It really doesn't matter. He's gone, and that's all that really matters, which gives the city of Yonkers an opportunity to develop in a different manner with greater responsibility, greater effectiveness. And because despite the fact that he told the mayor when the mayor gave the State of the City address, I think it was over a month ago, that crime rate had gone down 10% in the city of Yonkers. That is the biggest falsehood you have ever heard in your life. It is not down by 10%. It never was down by 10%. And shame on anybody who had the audacity to tell the mayor that that was the case. So whatever the case is, I hope sincerely that under Sapienza's leadership, and that's one of the major, major differences between Sapienza and Mueller, as far as I was concerned, and so this is my personal opinion, I just never found that, Mr. Mueller, even though he had the designation of police commissioner, which is a leadership role, he didn't have followers because he didn't have the capacity to lead. He didn't have that charisma. He didn't have that, je ne sais quoi. He didn't have that capacity. He just didn't have what it took. And at least I didn't find it, because if he did have what it took, then we would have had a tremendously different police department under his watch. It was a failure, as far as I'm concerned, and our crime rate has gone through the roof. Interestingly enough, only a few days ago, there was a crew of people who were assigned to an area that had suffered some recent upheaval with regard to community and shooting and stuff like that. One officer was shot in the stomach and thankfully is going to survive, yet that police officer is ready to retire, or was ready to retire within a week or two. He was on the job and he did what he needed to do. But what's very interesting is that all of a sudden, out of the blue, we have a foot patrol. Can you imagine? A foot patrol. We've been screaming about a foot patrol for 2 years, but we never had it because the police department didn't want it. The union didn't want it. They kept on pushing against it, and that was to the detriment of the city. So whatever the case is, we have an opportunity to change direction, and I believe that under Sapienza, we're going to get that. An enlightened individual, someone with leadership qualities, someone that's respected, and I think that that can move the whole city forward. It is one of the most important and crucial issues that the city has to move toward, has to engage in a different sort of demeanor, and we need the police, the local police type of policing. We need to get a community involvement, and so on and so forth. So I hope that that will make a big difference under his leadership. And hopefully as well, it would really be nice if we would get communication from the police department that can legitimize and validate the crime rate that is taking place in the city of Yonkers, instead of making believe that things are great. Well, show us the numbers. What's the whole point? Everybody lives on numbers. What are the statistics? Show me the proof. Where's the videotape? This is not a joke. This is legitimacy. This is how you create a panache. You create something of value to a city that has been suffering for a very long time for many, many reasons. It's not to blame one person or another. It's an evolution. But we've all managed to hopefully become a little bit more aware, more emboldened, more knowledgeable of how things can be conducted in a much more open and lucid way. You know, the press is not your enemy. The enemy is within you if you can't express exactly what's going on in your police department. I mean, what's the problem here? And why is it a problem? And it's different in every community. Point is, we've got our own issues here, and my concern is not about another community somewhere else. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I have to focus on what's happening here, because I do know this city better than I would know Albany or Buffalo or Syracuse or any of those other places that you can imagine, including other places in Westchester County. But this has got to change. And hopefully under Mr. Sapienza, the new police commissioner, it will change. Different demeanor, different attitude will also engender a greater relationship between the community and the police department. And hopefully, like I saw the three guys just assigned to the area that was under assault, where a gentleman by the name of Benton, the police officer, was shot. And they put in a a patrol unit there. Three guys, all white. It's not a white community specifically, but it's not devoid of white people. But how about something a little bit more balanced? How about maybe one person who's white, one person who's black, and one person who's Hispanic? Is there a problem here? For some people, language matters, and you need to be able to speak and converse in Spanish fluently in order to be able to contend with a particular concern. That's one. People also are understood a little bit better because of their cultural heritage. Then you've also got people who are black, who may not be comfortable with some white officers, but feel more comfortable, not that they're against them, but that they feel more comfortable with a black officer. So why don't we do this? What is this? This is not rocket science. Let's just get it done. Let's do it. Let's do it right. You know, this is where leadership really matters. And it would be very, very nice for the third largest city in the state. We've only been the third largest city for a few months now because of our population growth, which is really very exciting. And there's a lot of stuff that's going on that's really very, very beautiful about the city. It's not negative, and I certainly don't think of it in a negative way. I think that there are issues with personnel, and those personnel have not helped move the equation forward for a city that is looking for leadership and credibility in conduct and direction. And that's how we will grow if we focus on those issues. And that's what matters. There's a great deal of need for honesty and integrity and ethics. And if we respect one another, then we'll be able to build a city that respects itself and will earn the respect of others as well. So that's where we are with that. So I can only wish Mr. Chris Sapienza, the new police commissioner, all the best. And we'll certainly be there to help and support him, because I do believe in the police. And I believe that they're a necessary aspect of society. And I believe that we have a lot of issues in this city that we have to contend with. The police are the answer, not for every issue, but certainly for many issues. And that it needs to be understood and also needs to be fostered as part of the dynamic of any and every society. And whether some people think that the police are the problem, no, they're not the problem. There are laws, there are restrictions, they're on the books. You want to change those laws, you can always change them. That's why we have a government, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, we need respect of the police. We need respect of people by the police, and we need leadership that will guide us in the right direction, ameliorate those concerns that matter to our public concerns, our public issues, and also the issues of government and governance, and in order to be able to move ahead. And that is what will build us. We cannot be divided by little fiefdoms of personal interest, you know, where you get a fight for every little thing because this one wants a little bit more power than the other. You know, let's all buckle down and work together as a team. And maybe if we do that, then we could get a lot further than we even have to this point. So I think that that's the challenge of the city. And I think the city's up to it. And I think that that's what really matters. We're lucky to have the capacity, intelligence, credibility, and integrity of so many people who want to see things best for the city. And as we get better, so does Westchester County, and so does the state. And it will be to a credit to the administration and to the different organizations that are here and operating within the city. So that's where it's at. Okay, well, let's now move on to something else, which I think is important, which is the international news. And we'll cover what's going on here. Well, interestingly enough, Germany's parliamentary president has visited Israel for the Holocaust remembrance. Well, during her Israeli visit, Bundestag President Bärbel Bas, B-A-S is the way she spells her last name, has voiced her, quote, deep grief and shame, end quote, at Germany's role in the Holocaust. And she wanted, or rather she warned, that rising anti-Semitism in her country needed to be urgently combated. Germany's parliamentary speaker, Bärbel Bas, on Wednesday, that's today, because of the difference of many hours, called on her country to do all it could to counter anti-Semitism in society as she visited a Holocaust commemoration site in Israel ahead of her official remembrance events. Quote, regrettably, we are experiencing a type of anti-Semitism in our country, too, where one can and must only say, take action now, she said at the Yad Vashem Memorial in Jerusalem. And what else did she say? Bas said that she had heard that many young Jews in Germany were scared of another Holocaust. Quote, these are alarm signals that have to put us very much on our guard and where we have to work against it with all the means we have as a state under the rule of law, she said. Bas had written in the guest book that, quote, we must not forget Germans wiped out 6 million lives. I think of the dead in deep grief and shame, end quote. She thanked Yad Vashem for giving those who were murdered a face and a name, end quote. She said the question remained of how such a thing could happen and why so few people had helped prevent it. Quote, for me, this visit is a very emotional day because I'm very aware that I have been invited to the national commemoration of the German, and of course also as a person representing the German Bundestag, she told reporters. I'm also very choked up because my mother is from Germany. I speak German fluently, and this is a very emotional thing for me. Anyway, that is something special that I feel very strongly personally, she says. I'm very grateful that I've received the invitation to take part in the commemorations. So what will her visit include? Bas is a member of Germany's ruling center-left Social Democratic Party, who is making her first official trip to Israel, was to meet with Israeli President Isaac Herzog and members of the Knesset, Israel's parliament. She's also to attend a ceremony in the Knesset, during which some names of those killed during the Holocaust will be read out as part of events for Israel's Holocaust Remembrance Day. According to Israeli figures, there are 161,400 Holocaust survivors still living in the country. The Holocaust, also known as Shoah, was the systematic murder of 6 million Jews by Nazi Germany and its collaborators across German-occupied Europe between 1941 and 1945. Around two-thirds of Europe's Jewish population died in pogroms, mass shootings, or German extermination camps such as Auschwitz-Birkenau. So that is the story. And those are the issues. The big question is, can Auschwitz or something similar to Auschwitz reoccur? And that is a big question that many people ask, and it's very, very difficult to answer. So there are all kinds of things that lend themselves to these sort of crises all over the world. So these are very, very pertinent issues, to say the least. Now, let's just quickly look and see. Let's look at what's happening here first with Elon Musk. Elon Musk has bought Twitter. And the question is, what does it mean for the platform? So Musk's vision of creating a bastion of free speech with less moderation and a higher bar for removing offending tweets could also lead to more abusive content, disinformation, and hate speech, critics fear. So the board of Twitter on Monday agreed to the takeover bid by Elon Musk, marking a dramatic reversal of its earlier hesitation to accept the unsolicited offer. To fully own the social media platform, Musk will pay $54.20 per share in cash or $44 billion, a 38% premium on the company's closing price on April 1. He described the offer purchase as best and final when he announced the bid on April 14. Musk is the world's richest person with an estimated net worth of $250 billion, and he had already secured financing for the deal. The billionaire wants to take Twitter private upon completion of the transaction, which is expected to happen by the end of the year. So what is Musk's vision for Twitter? Twitter, which has about 217 million daily active users worldwide, has been a popular one-too-many messaging platform with a global reach. Its importance and impact have grown considerably in recent years, with many influential politicians and companies and activists and celebrities using it to communicate with their followers and consumers. Musk says he views Twitter as, quote, the de facto town square, and is not buying the company to make money, but instead to protect free speech. He wants to open source the social network's algorithm and make changes to its content policies by including an edit feature, less moderation, and introducing a higher bar for removing offending tweets. Musk is a prolific Twitter user who describes himself as a free speech absolutist who wants to rid the platform of fake accounts and bots, as well as shift away from advertising as its main revenue source. Unlike its peers like Facebook and TikTok, Twitter has struggled financially due to its inability to generate enough advertising revenue to make a profit. The company reported a loss of $221 million last year. Musk believes he can increase revenue through subscriptions that give paying customers a better experience, possibly even an ad-free version of Twitter. Twitter co-founder and former CEO Jack Dorsey praised Musk's decision to take the platform, quote, back from Wall Street, end quote. He also said that he trusts the light of consciousness. So what does it mean for the platform? But there are many that have expressed concerns that relaxing content restrictions and a more hands-off approach to moderation could turn the platform into a haven for abusive and hate speech as well as disinformation. It's a bit concerning when you think about what Musk's ideas mean in practice, said Eric Jensen, a sociologist from the University of Warwick. If you try to pull the existing efforts to try to reduce the amount of abusive speech on Twitter, the amount of disinformation around COVID-19, that doesn't mean there is better free speech, Jensen told Deutsche Welle. If the people with the loudest voices can abuse others into not participating, that's not really free speech. Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal reportedly told employees on Monday, it's not clear how things will change once the deal closes, and that, quote, this is a period of uncertainty, end quote. Meanwhile, some governments have already started issuing warnings that a Musk-controlled Twitter will have to adhere to local laws. Thierry Breton, the European Commissioner for the Internal Market, advised Agence France-Presse on Tuesday that the company will have to adapt, quote, unquote, to European Union regulations on issues like online harassment and child pornography, among other things. Lawmakers in the European Union are finalizing the Digital Services Act, which will set limits on content, and the Digital Markets Act, which will regulate tech giants. In the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Boris Johnson's spokesman told reporters that all social media platforms must act in a responsible manner, and, quote, that includes protecting their users from harm on their sites, end quote. Quote, obviously, it is too early to say what, if any, changes will be made to how Twitter operates, he added. We will continue to work with them to make sure it continues to improve. In a recent TED interview, Musk said that Twitter would abide by national laws that restrict speech around the world. Beyond that, he said, he'd be very reluctant to delete posts or permanently banning users who violate the company's rules. It won't be perfect, Musk added, but But I think we wanted to really have the perception and reality that speech is as free as reasonably possible. So then there's the issue of removing fake accounts and bots. Analysts say by taking Twitter private, Musk will have more room to maneuver and be free to make changes unencumbered by shareholders' pressure to turn a profit. Jensen said the move would allow the company to instigate some badly needed reforms, including removing the bot networks and fake accounts that have plagued the service. Presumably, one of the reasons Twitter has been slow to do that in the past is that if we cleared out all the bots and fake accounts, Twitter's numbers of actual users would probably be a lot lower, he noted. By taking Twitter private, the company could more easily weather the shock of a major loss in daily users. Those are the challenges. So I'm not freaked out by Elon Musk. I think that he will do something that will work. And he's quite resilient, and he can handle it. He didn't get where he is, you know, by just shrinking away from, you know, issues like this. So very, very important. Now, let's look at some other things. Very, very important and pertinent, too, with regard to Ukraine. The war in Ukraine is compounding Africa's food crisis. Exploding food prices are driving hunger and poverty, particularly in Ethiopia. Aid organizations say they've had to cut food rations in half for even the most needy. The war in Ukraine may be thousands of kilometers away, but it is hitting people in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia with full force. Food prices are skyrocketing, particularly for staples including bread and vegetables. Every percentage increase in food prices leads to at least 10 million more people in the world falling into poverty, into hunger, the German development minister, Svenja Schulte, on a trip to the Ethiopian capital to promote a global alliance for food security. In Africa, too, the dramatic consequences of Russia's war of aggression are painful. When food and energy become more expensive, it exacerbates existing hunger crises, the minister had added. Schulte arrived in a country where several disasters have collided. Not only is the COVID-19 pandemic still raging, Ethiopia is suffering its worst drought in decades. Climate change has made the typical rainy season either much shorter or virtually non-existent. And when the rain does not fall in these conditions, the ground is unable to absorb all the water and destructive floods can come quickly. Moreover, a recent plague of locusts has devastated crops in several regions of the country. These crises are becoming increasingly brutal and complex, said Matthias Spät, the German non-governmental organization Welthungershilfe, that means the World Hunger Help regional representative for the Horn of Africa. These are unbelievable conditions, and people are plunged into new crises year after year without being able to recover in the meantime. They are exhausted, he said. In northern Ethiopia, in the Tigray region, a bloody conflict is further weakening the country. In a meeting with Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who observers have blamed for fomenting the civil war, Svenja Schulte said she urged him to make progress on the human rights situation in Tigray. Already 25 million of Ethiopia's 112 million inhabitants cannot ensure their own survival and are dependent on aid. The Russian war in Ukraine is further exacerbating the extremely tense supply situation in the country and throughout the region. Aid organizations are reaching their limits as well. Resources are now becoming scarce everywhere, said Spät. Normally, Welthungershilfe in Ethiopia invests 80% of its aid money in long-term projects and the remaining 20% in rapid emergency relief. But that is shifting dramatically now. We are approaching a 50-50 percentage ratio, he added. Bates feared that the effects of the war in Ukraine will be felt even more bitterly in the region in the coming months. The aid deliveries that are being brought to Tigray and other regions, there's a Ukraine label on every sack of grain. At the same time, markets for food and fuel are collapsing in the face of skyrocketing prices. Other aid organizations in Ethiopia are now also under enormous pressure. We fear that we don't have sufficient resources for the many troubled areas around the world, said Uta Klamert, the executive director of the United Nations World Food Program, the WFP. The consequence of this, she says, is that food rations have to be scaled down. At the moment, we already have to cut them in half in seven countries, for example, in Kenya, the Central African Republic, and Yemen. In some cases, these are food restrictions of up to half the previous rations for each family per month, she said. Concerns regarding hunger will prompt further unrest. United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, provides food packages to severely malnourished children in Ethiopia. The price of these has gone up 10 to 15% in the last 3 months, said Michelle Silvadai, the deputy director for UNICEF in Ethiopia. This is having a significant impact on our budget. So we will have to significantly reduce the number of aid deliveries if we don't get funding elsewhere. In the end, he said, it is the children who suffer. This is partly the reason why Minister Schulte made a stop during her trip to the African Union, the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, to promote a global alliance for food security. Concerns about the increased food prices are high in the African Union, she said after her talks there. Quote, many countries in Africa rely on subsidized bread prices, but because many countries are too deeply in debt, that policy has reached its limit, Schulte advised. And if bread is then no longer accessible to large parts of the population, then the countries fear further unrest, then they fear protest and thus destabilization, she added. In the long term, the African Union's goal is to produce more food itself and to grow crops that are adaptable to climate change. As an example of this can be seen at the World Bank Urban Gardening Project in the middle of Addis Ababa, surrounded by high-rise buildings and steep slopes left by massive landslides, a green oasis has emerged. A terraced small-scale farm has been installed there where vegetables can grow despite erosion, and the project that also employs a number of women and young people, training them to provide for themselves and their families. And that's one of the big issues. So let's move on. Before I move on to this story, I want you to go back to our studio screen. Bear with me a second. Yeah, there is nobody there, no problem. Bear with me a second here. All right. 1 second. All right, 1 second here. Well, let's look at this. Europe is prepared for Russia's gas blackmail, European Union chief says. And this is a live update. Russian energy giant Gazprom said it would halt gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria. The European Union has raised concerns that Moscow is using energy supplies as blackmail over the conflict in Ukraine. So Gazprom has halted gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria. European Union said Russia's gas move is energy blackmail. Russia bars entry to 287 British ministers of parliament. Zelensky warns Russia's goals go beyond Ukraine. And Germany is to supply Ukraine with anti-aircraft tanks. Okay, well, Zelensky says he was invited to the G20 summit in Indonesia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked Indonesian President Joko Widodo for inviting him to attend some of the G20 summit events. The leaders also discussed the food security issues. Had talks with President of Indonesia Joko Widodo, thanked for the support of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity, in particular for a clear position in the United Nations. food security issues were discussed. Appreciate inviting me to the G20 summit, Zelensky wrote on Twitter. Indonesia holds the rotating presidency of the G20 and will host the group summit in Bali on November 15 to 16. Indonesian authorities have not yet confirmed that Zelensky has been invited to the summit. In March, Southeast Asian country voted in favor of the United Nations General Assembly resolution condemning the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Germany revises its economic growth predictions amid Ukraine worries. The Ukraine crisis prompted German officials to scale down their forecast for 2022 after previously predicting that Germany's economy would grow by 3.6% this year. The government now expects a growth of only 2.2% by the end of 2022. However, the government also foresees 2.5% growth in 2023, slightly higher than the previous estimate of 2.3%. German economy minister Robert Habeck said that the country was facing, quote, significant, end quote, risks. Quote, after 2 years of the COVID pandemic, there is a new burden due to the war in Ukraine, he said. The war in Ukraine and its economic consequences remind us that we are vulnerable, end quote. He also said that Germany would gradually escape the trap of Russian energy imports, end quote, and that the percentage of Russian gas used in Germany has already dropped from 55% to 35%. The German government believes it would take at least 2 years to eliminate the country's dependency on Russia. The U.S. is swapping former Marine Reed for Russian pilot Yaroshenko. Russia and the United States staged a secretive prisoner swap on Wednesday, exchanging two prisoners who had been detained years before the Ukraine war. The deal saw former U.S. Marine Trevor Reed being released from Russia's detention, where he was serving a 9-year prison sentence. Reed, now 28, had been sentenced for attacking police officers after a night of heavy drinking in Moscow in 2019. He claims to have no recollection of the incident. Washington says Reed had been wrongfully detained, quote unquote. In return, the United States released Russian pilot Konstantin Yaroshenko, who had been arrested in 2010 in Liberia and sentenced to 20 years over conspiracy to smuggle cocaine into the United States. The exchange took place in Turkey, according to Yaroshenko's wife. U.S. President Joe Biden welcomed Reed, saying that his return, quote, required difficult decisions that I do not take lightly, end quote. Russia never stopped their attack on Azovstal, Ukrainian official advises. Well, Ukraine Defense Ministry advisor Yuri Sak advised that over 1,000 civilians were still trapped in the Mariupol steel mill alongside 500 wounded Ukrainian fighters. Russian forces, quote, continue to throw everything we have on Mariupol and the Azovstal, despite the words of the president of Russia that the offensive will discontinue, Sak had said. Well, they haven't stopped for even an hour. The shelling continues, missile strikes continue, artillery continues, infantry continues to attack. Sak, S-A-K, said that Kyiv's allies have shifted their stance on delivering heavy weapons to Ukraine, but said his country needed more from Germany. Meanwhile, the German Minister of Defense made a pledge about providing Ukraine with more tanks, but this is still insufficient, he said. Russia is withdrawing from the United Nations World Tourism Organization, UNWTO, ahead of a vote by its Executive Council to suspend Moscow's membership over its invasion of Ukraine. Quote, Russia has announced its intention to withdraw from the United Nations World Tourism Organization, the United Nations tourism body said in a tweet, adding that Russia's suspension, quote, is effective immediately, end quote. The decision to hold the Extraordinary General Assembly on the suspension of Russia's membership of UNWTO was taken in early March. After Russia invaded Ukraine in February, the countries of Colombia, Guatemala, Lithuania, Poland, Slovenia, and Ukraine submitted an application to suspend the Russian Federation's membership of the organization. Despite the Russian withdrawal, the vote at the United Nations WTO Extraordinary General Assembly in Madrid will continue. Members will have their say through a democratic vote, the organization had said. Well, Russia bans entry to 287 British ministers of parliament. The Russian foreign ministry said that it had imposed personal restrictions and banned entry to 287 British members of parliament in response to the United Kingdom's sanctions against Russian lawmakers. Quote, in response to the decision taken by the British government on March 11 to add 386 State Duma deputies to a sanctions list in a reciprocal move, personal restrictions are being placed on 287 members of the House of Commons, the ministry said in a statement. Well, Russia's foreign ministry has also accused British ministers of parliament of fueling unwarranted Russophobic hysteria, end quote. The United Kingdom House of Commons has a total of 650 members. Transnistria officials say shots were fired at an ammo depot. Officials in Moldova's breakaway regions of Transnistria reported drones flying over the Ukrainian border and said shots were fired at the border village of Kolbasna. The separatist government in Transnistria is allied with Moscow. A host of Russian peacemakers is deployed in the region with their duties including securing massive stockpile of Soviet-era weapons in Kolbasna. And with some 20,000 tons of ammo remaining at the depot, is believed to be the biggest ammunition stockpile in Europe. Last night, several drones were noticed in the sky over the village of Kolbasna. The Transnistrian Interior Ministry said on its website, they added that shots were fired towards the village from the across the border, but there were no reports of casualties. Ukraine war has fueled speculation that Russia would attempt to take the Moldovan region by force. Kyiv has accused Russia of staging false flag operations in an attempt to drag Transnistria into the conflict. German Car Club asks members to drive less to curb Russian oil reliance. Germany's ADAC Automobile Club, Europe's largest motoring association, has asked its 21 million members to help reduce the country's reliance on oil imports from Russia by driving less. In an open letter posted on its website, the association also called on members to drive slower to help reduce fuel consumption by up to 20%. The ADAC also urged the public to consider alternatives such as walking, cycling, or public transport. Russia's defense ministry said its forces had destroyed a large quantity of Western-supplied weapons in Ukraine's Zaporizhia region with long-range missiles. On the territory of Zaporizhia, aluminum plant, high-precision, long-range, sea-based caliber missiles destroyed hangars with a large batch of foreign weapons and ammunition supplied by the United States and European countries for Ukrainian troops, the ministry said in a briefing. Officials did not say what type of weapons were destroyed. Ukrainian authorities did not comment on the Russian claim. On Tuesday, 40 countries held a security summit at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany to discuss arms supplies to Ukraine. USA pledged to move, quote, heaven and earth, end quote, to help the Ukrainian army defeat Russia. Well, Germany is concerned, but gas flows are stable. Berlin is monitoring the gas supply situation very closely after Russia's decision to halt deliveries to Bulgaria and Poland. Germany's energy ministry said it was coordinating with energy companies and providers. Gas flows are at a stable level overall at this point in time, a spokesperson for the ministry said. However, we are concerned to see that there has been a stoppage of supplies in Eastern, in European partner countries. Separately, Germany's official agency in charge of energy, the Bundesnetzagentur, confirmed that the gas supply in Germany was currently satisfactory. Russia is reporting a fire at an ammunition depot in Belgorod. A Russian ammunition depot had apparently caught on fire overnight, according to the governor of Russia's Belgorod region, Vyacheslav Gladkov. His statement comes after several blasts were heard in the region. And the governor said that preliminary information indicated a blaze in an ammunition depot in one of the border region villages. In an online post, Gladkov said that an open fire has now been extinguished and there were no civilian casualties. He did not comment on the cause of the fire. Strategically important bridge is damaged in Ukraine's Odessa region. Ukrainian officials reported about another missile attack on the strategically important bridge over the Dniester estuary in the southern Odessa region. The bridge was already targeted by a Russian airstrike on Tuesday. According to the chairman of Ukrainian Railways, Oleksandr Kamishin, no casualties among railway workers were reported. The damage to infrastructure will be determined after the air raid alert ends, he wrote on Telegram. The Odessa Military Administration confirmed the incident and noted that the bridge had been destroyed. The auto railway bridge across the Dniester estuary connects the western and eastern parts of Odessa region. Destroying the bridge will essentially stop the rail link between them. Last week, Major General Rustam Minikayev, the acting commander of Russia's Central Military District, said that Moscow plans to establish full control over the Donbas region and southern Ukraine. He also claimed that control of southern Ukraine would give Russia a gateway to the breakaway Moldovan region of Transdniester. Austria denies it would pay for gas in rubles and slammed the Russian propaganda. Vienna will not pay rubles for Russian gas, Austrian Chancellor Karl Nehammer said on Wednesday, dismissed reports by Russian news agencies that Vienna had accepted Moscow's term of payment. In a tweet, Nehammer slammed the report as fake news of Russian propaganda and, quote, Austria's energy company OMV naturally continues to pay gas deliveries from Russia in euros, he said. All jointly agreed European Union sanctions to the final iota, the chancellor added. And then a minister of parliament said, we don't expect Russia to turn off German gas supply. Ralf Stegner, a German lawmaker with the center-left Social Democrats, the SPD, advised Deutsche Welle he, quote, doesn't expect Russia to turn off the gas supply to his country despite Gazprom doing so to Poland and Bulgaria on Wednesday. Nevertheless, he said that Germany was preparing for it should it happen. Stegner also said he doesn't see a policy shift after Germany vowed to deliver heavy weapons to Ukraine after weeks of reluctance. We always said that we tried to support Ukraine with everything we can and which is responsible in terms of political, economic, financial, and military aid. We are talking about defense tanks, anti-aircraft tanks, not offensive ones. The second part we really have to look at is that we help the Ukrainians as best as we can, but not enhancing the risk of getting NATO or Germany being involved in the war itself. Stegner also refuted suggestions there is a pro-Russian sentiment within his party, even though former center-left SPD Chancellor Gerhard Schröder still maintains close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Russia is stopping gas deliveries, and it's unacceptable, the European Union's von der Leyen has advised. Gazprom's announcement that it is halting gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria, both European Union member states, has been roundly condemned by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. The announcement by Gazprom that it is unilaterally stopping delivery of gas to customers in Europe is yet another attempt by Russia to use gas as an instrument of blackmail, she said in a statement published by Twitter. So bear with me a moment because I've got to get that. Bear with me a second. Okay. I'm a little bit slow. Hopefully they'll be hanging around there for me. They know I'm a little bit slow because of my physical condition. So bear with me a moment here. Okay. All right, so I was able to buzz them in. I'll be able to get up here, which will be cool. All right, 1 second. All right. Okay. All right, so that's my neighbor's dog. So he's a very loquacious character. And he's the alpha male on this floor, as you can imagine. So anyway, so we're getting this delivery. Okay, here they are. Thank you, guys.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you. Be well. You too. Did I lose something? No. Okay. All right, so he's definitely the alpha male. All right, so let me just pick this up. Bear with me. Okay. All right, so I think we got some things done here. I'll get back to where we were before. I'm sorry for the delay. One second. Maybe this will work this way. Okay, I think that will work. All right. Now. Okay, I think we got some of this stuff done. Thank God for that. Sorry for the interruption. Okay, let me pull out all my contraptions here so I can pick up where we left off. All right. Okay, now. 1 second here. I think we had that done. Bear with me a second. One moment here. All right, I'm trying to find out where I left off. Further, sorry about that. Okay, yeah, we're up to this part. Switzerland evidently has blocked over $9 billion of Russian assets, so a report says. Seems that Swiss authorities have now frozen some 9 billion Swiss francs, it's $9.33 billion. In Russian assets, according to a report in the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. The Zurich Daily did not name a source for their figures, which are about 1.5 billion francs more than officially reported on April 7. While Switzerland is not a European Union member, its government joined sanctions against Russia declared by the European Union over the war in Ukraine. United Kingdom's Rob says that Russia's decision to cut off gas will make it more isolated. After Russia's Gazprom confirmed it was cutting off gas deliveries to Poland and Bulgaria, British Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab said that the move would have a very damaging effect on Russia itself. Energy exports are a key element of Russia's economy. By stopping the gas, Moscow is becoming more and more, not just a political pariah, but an economic pariah, Rob told Sky News. Poland confirms a halt of Russian gas supply. Polish state gas company PGNiG has confirmed that Russian gas supplies from Gazprom have been cut off. Gazprom announced earlier on Wednesday that it had stopped all gas deliveries to Poland and Bulgaria after the two countries had failed to pay for the gas in rubles as demanded last month by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Well, Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said that Poland's gas storage facilities were 76% full and that his country could obtain necessary supplies from other sources. European gas prices have risen by as much as 24% following Gazprom's statement. Well, Russian forces are taking have taken villages in the Donbas offensive, the Ukrainian Defense Ministry has advised. Russian forces have been penetrating deeper into eastern Ukraine as they seek to take control of the country's Donbas region, Ukraine's Defense Ministry had said. According to the ministry's report, Ukrainian forces have been driven from the village of Velika Komishuvaha and Zavodny in the Kharkiv region and Zarichne and Novotoshkivske in the Donetsk region. It said that Russian forces were continuing to fire upon the area around the Azovstal. Stal is Russian, but I know of it. I can understand it. Azov is the area, and Stal is, I know it from the German, it means steel. So it's the steel plant along the Azov, so the steel works in the southern port city of Mariupol, where an estimated 2,000 Ukrainian troops and 1,000 civilians are said to be holed up in bunkers. Well, Russian gas supplies have been shut off to Poland and Bulgaria. The supply of Russian gas to Poland and Bulgaria has been halted, Russia's Gazprom announced on Wednesday morning. In a statement carried by Russian news agencies, the firm said that the supplies would be suspended as the countries had not made payments in rubles for the fuel delivery as demanded by Russian President Vladimir Putin. It said that supplies would be stopped until the payments are made. Poland had earlier said it expected gas flows from Russia via Ukraine and Belarus to be cut at 8 in the morning. Bulgaria's energy ministry had also announced that Russia's Gazprom had said it would halt gas supplies as of Wednesday. The energy ministry had said that halting its gas supply would breach the current contract as gas deliveries for April had already been paid. The ministry will give a news briefing on the situation later Wednesday morning, and which we haven't gotten yet. Austria, meanwhile, says that Russian natural gas deliveries are continuing unrestricted. With no indication that this would change, Austria obtains 80% of its gas from Russia. Now, Ukraine has accused Russia of blackmailing Europe over energy to try and damage Kyiv's allies and undermine their solidarity in taking action against Russia's invasion of its neighbor. Russian President Vladimir Putin has called on unfriendly, quote-unquote, countries to pay for gas imports in rubles, but most buyers have so far rejected the demand. While Ukraine still has control over most of its airspace, the United Kingdom military intelligence has said, Russia has so far failed to gain supremacy in the skies over Ukraine, the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense has said in its latest report. It said that the Russian Air Force had little air access in northern and western Ukraine, with Russian attacks there being carried out from a distance using so-called standoff weapons. The report said that Russian aircraft were concentrating their operations in the south and east of the country, giving support to ground forces. According to the report, most Russian aerial attacks in the key strategic city of Mariupol were being carried out using unguided free-falling bombs, meaning that civilian casualties could not be prevented. China's DJI suspends the sale of drones in Russia and Ukraine. DJI, the world's largest drone maker, said it would suspend business in Russia and Ukraine to ensure its products aren't used in combat. DJI abhors any use of our drones to cause harm, and we are temporarily suspending sales in these countries in order to help ensure no one uses our drones, Impany told Reuters news agency. It is the first major Chinese firm to hold sales to Russia since Moscow invaded Ukraine in February. The company said it was, quote, not to make a statement about any country, but to make a statement about our principles, end quote. Russian and Ukrainian forces have reportedly used DJI drones primarily for reconnaissance purposes. Well, blasts are heard in Russia's Belgorod. A series of blasts were heard in the Russian city of Belgorod near the Ukrainian border early on Wednesday. Regional Governor Vyacheslav Gladkov said in a message on Telegram, The cause of the blast were not immediately apparent. At the start of April, Russia claimed that Ukrainian military helicopters flew across the border and bombed a fuel depot in the city. Ukraine has denied it carried out the attacks. The UK warns of terrible consequences if Russia wins in Ukraine. In a keynote foreign policy speech planned for Wednesday at London's Mansion House, United Kingdom Foreign Minister Liz Truss is expected to call for more countries to support Ukraine's war effort. A preprint of the speech said that countries need to, quote, double down, end quote, on their support for Ukraine and ramp up, quote, unquote, military production, including tanks and warplanes. Kyiv's victory is a strategic imperative for us all, it said. If Putin succeeds, there will be untold further misery across Europe and terrible consequences across the globe. We would never feel safe again, it added. Truss is expected to say it will be an imperative to stop Russian President Vladimir Putin from claiming victory and to use the war as a catalyst for a new world security order. Zelensky said that Russia's goals go beyond Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said it must be clear to everyone that Russia's war against Ukraine is just the beginning. The ultimate goal of Russia's leadership is not just to seize the territory of Ukraine, but to dismember the entire center and east of Europe and deliver a global blow to democracy, he said. In his nightly video address, Zelensky also claimed, quote, a global strike against democracy is one of the Moscow's aims. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin negotiated settlement to the war. Speaking after meeting United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres in Moscow, the Russian President Vladimir Putin expressed, quote, hope, end quote, that diplomatic negotiations can end the war in Ukraine. Quote, despite the fact that the military operation is ongoing, we still hope that we will be able to reach agreements on the diplomatic track we are negotiating. We do not reject talks, Putin said. Well, he, however, added Russia could not give Ukraine security guarantees without resolving territorial issues in Crimea and separatist territories in eastern Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has previously said that in a future nationwide referendum would be held to decide those issues. The terrorists called for a ceasefire and urged Russia to allow the evacuation of civilians trapped at a giant steel mill in Mariupol surrounded by Russian forces. Putin said he was open to the United Nations and Red Cross evacuating civilians from the plant, but claimed Ukrainian forces were using civilians as shields and not allowing them to leave. Guterres is expected to visit Kyiv on Thursday to meet with Zelensky and Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. Vladimir said, we are negotiating, we don't reject talks. Anyway, Kyiv pulls down the Soviet-era Monument of Brotherhood. Authorities in Kyiv dismantled a Soviet-era monument which symbolized friendship between Russia and Ukraine. Quote, it took some effort, but the Soviet sculpture of the two workers symbolizing the reunification of Ukraine and Russia was dismantled this evening, Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko says in a statement on social media. The statue depicted a Ukrainian and Russian working on a plinth, holding aloft together a Soviet order of friendship. It was erected in 1982 to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Soviet Union. This monument symbolized friendship between Ukrainian and Russian nations. We now see that this friendship is destruction of Ukrainian cities, ruining the lives of Ukrainians, killing tens of thousands of peaceful people. I'm convinced such a monument has an entirely different meaning now, Klitschko had said. After weeks of mounting pressure, the German government said it would end, or rather send, heavy weapons to Ukraine. German Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht pledged to provide Gepard, I guess that's the way it should be pronounced, Gepard self-propelled anti-aircraft guns during a speech at the U.S. Defense Conference on Ukraine. Polish and Bulgarian officials have said that Russia's Gazprom has threatened to cut gas supplies starting on Wednesday. The suspension would be the first since Russia's insisted foreign buyers pay for gas in rubles. So that was the story there, which we advised you of. And one second. Okay. One moment here. All right, so let me just move on. One second. All right, we should be there in a second. All right, I think we've got some of the stuff done here. Where are we? One moment. 1 minute here. Oh, yes, I wanted to talk to you about this. It's not very well known, but evidently Asians are being exploited in Portugal. They're being engaged and employed as fruit pickers. Europe's demand for fruit has turned Portugal's Alentejo, a region, into a gold mine for landowners and corporations. Their laborers are mostly Asians hoping for a better life, but they pay a high price. So this is a report. Bear with me a moment. You'll find this interesting. Bear with me a moment.
There are three simple changes I tell all my arthritis patients to make.
Okay.
Number one, you have to start drinking more water.
Okay. We should be able to do this. I hope this comes through. We'll see in a moment. It's a video clip.
People come from Nepal, India, Bangladesh, and Thailand to pick fruit in southern Portugal for European supermarket chains. This is archive footage. The agricultural firms no longer want reporters. The farming associations stonewalled us, and local authorities also closed their doors. They have a problem, and it involves the foreign workers. Thousands of them live around the small town of São Teutónio, helping with the harvest.
They're totally over the top. They're in the majority now.
At times, you get just three Portuguese people walking by here for every 20 migrants.
For better or for worse, the way they came was definitely not well organized, with no thought being given to local infrastructure.
So what makes Portugal so attractive? Jean Paul Detter from northern India has worked here for several years. He says Portugal is a prime destination for many Indians.
Maybe right now it's the first choice to our side in the northern side of the India. Because south side people, they mostly want to go in the Gulf country. And northern side people want to go in Canada or Europe. And when they will come Europe, they first come to here in Portugal to get residency. Because here, maybe one and a half year they will get.
Portugal appears to be an express route into the European Union. Word got around, and this region is now also attracting migrants who previously tried their luck in Denmark or Germany. Like Ravi Baines, a barber from India.
I have better life in Germany, but I had just only problem because Germany, I have no permission for working in Germany. Yeah, because I was there in a refugee, and my case is over. And these people say you can't stay here; you have to move to another country. So.
But Portugal's apparent open door comes at a price. Many migrants pay thousands of euros to get here, but only earn between 600 and 1,000 euros a month at most. They work 6 days a week and always have to worry they might not be paid, especially if they were hired by a recruitment agency.
If they work 100 hours, 200 hours in the monthly, sometimes they cut 10 hours, 15 hours. They say, okay, you have a mistake. You not pay 200 hours. You work it 180 hours. And sometimes they cut money for insurance and a lot of things they cut. They not pay well.
Because the migrants need to send money home to their families, they have to save wherever possible, especially on accommodation. Jean-Paul Detter shares a place with other workers away from the field. He doesn't have his own room.
Yeah, for us it's good because we never live in the company house. But in the company house, not good.
They have zero privacy, but the conditions aren't too bad.
Wait a second. Okay, I guess that's as far as we went for some reason. I think it's just taking time to connect somehow. Well, no real reason to hang around there. There's a bit of a problem. And then just so you know how things are in other places as well, 1 second, I'm going to move on there. Once we go to one more place, bear with me a second, and then we'll be able to catch up, hopefully. All right, almost there. All right. Okay. This was a little bit frightening. It seemed Macron was targeted by tomatoes on the first public appearance after the re-election. So French President Emmanuel Macron was a target on Wednesday of a bunch of tomatoes hurled by a disgruntled onlooker as he made his first public appearance after his weekend re-election victory. Macron has spent the last days secluded in an out-of-town residence and then the Élysée Palace, considering the formation of a new government following his defeat of far-right leader Marine Le Pen on Sunday. Reflecting his promise of uniting a divided France, he chose for his first post-election visit the French town of Cergy-Pontoise in the Paris suburbs, a low-income area where far-left candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon came out on top of the first round of voting on April 10. Macron was meeting residents when a bunch of cherry tomatoes whizzed by close to his face, missing him but hitting bystanders. His security detail moved swiftly, shouting projectile, projectile, and covering Macron's head with their hands while protecting him with a black umbrella. Macron appeared unflustered, but keen to move on as rapidly as possible. No, no, no fighting, he could be heard saying. While the incident was minor, it was a reminder of the challenges of fully protecting a president who is fond of immersing himself into crowds, even in areas that can be hostile to him. In June of 2021, he was slapped in the face by a man while greeting locals on another trip. Élysée officials emphasized that the visit to Cergy-Pontoise had been marked by a good atmosphere with an intense crush caused by people trying to get as close as possible to the president. In the poorest neighborhoods, whether it's in cities or rural areas, we really need to create the conditions for real and effective equality of opportunity, Macron said during the visit. It is the only way to get rid of this distrust and sense of abandonment, he said. France's constitutional council is due to certify the results of the election later today, paving the way for Macron's second term to start next month. With an eye on parliament elections in June, Macron is expected to, in the coming days, to name a new prime minister and government, but has offered few clues on who he may be considering. I will appoint someone who is committed to social and environmental issues and is productive, he said. A speculation whirled that a woman could head the government for the first time since Edith Cresson in 1991. That would be unbelievable. and probably very welcome. One second. And this is very interesting. Evidently, Biden and the Clintons have read a tribute to Madeleine Albright at the memorial service. President Joe Biden, the former President Bill Clinton, and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will lead tributes on Wednesday to Madeleine Albright, the first woman to helm the U.S. State Department at a memorial service in Washington. And Albright, 84, died of cancer last month, prompting an outpouring of condolences from around the world. The former Secretary of State, who helmed the State Department from 1997 to 2001, was heralded as a trailblazer. Albright and her family fled the Nazis in her native Czechoslovakia during World War II. They eventually settled in the United States, and Albright grew to become a tough-talking diplomat, famous for sometimes sharp tongue. The memorial service will be held at the Washington National Cathedral, and more than 1,400 people are expected to attend, according to a spokesperson for the family, including foreign ministers, ambassadors, and members of Congress. So, very well respected, that's for sure. And this is very interesting because I had not known that, but pigeon peas help Madagascar's farmers grow food despite the fact that there's a drought. So growing edible crops used to be so hard and in drought-prone southern Madagascar that nothing but wild plants and cactuses were available to feed the children until pigeon peas were grown. And evidently they can thrive with very, very little water. So that's very encouraging. I guess we're learning a great deal. I never heard that before. So, but like everything, all these things seem to matter. They make a big difference, no matter how you cut it. We're learning a tremendous amount of things as we go through life. What we thought we knew, we didn't know. Okay, let me just see this. All right, 1 second here. I think we basically have covered everything. Just trying to see if there's anything else here that might be of interest. But I think not. All right. I think that that's it for us today. And we'll see what goes on tomorrow. So let me just say goodbye. And thank you for being with us and for your patience as well. Take care. Bye.